This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And right now what the Longhorns are saying, they're not done yet. No, they're very, very much alive after this five-game win streak with the season, regular season finale this Saturday against Oklahoma State. I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com. You are, of course, listening to the Yak.com, another episode of the Droppin' Dimes podcast, episode 47. Apologies for the voice sounding a little weird, just allergies and coughing up a bunch of junk and taking a bunch of Mucinex and trying to get that out of my system, so you don't get to hear my usual beautiful pipes. There's some sarcasm in there. but you do get to hear me talk about some Texas basketball wins for a change. I'll be honest, I didn't think after the Iowa State game I would do any Drop and Dimes podcast that would be anything other than discussing, like, you know, at the end of the season, whether Texas was going to move on from Shaka Smart or not, which we'll discuss his status a little bit and as it relates to the program right now. But just the after losing by 29 points to Iowa State and the way they looked and just the look on everybody's faces, I was like, I mean, how could you look at that team and not think it's done? You know, with all the injuries, that was the first game that Jericho Sims missed with his back injury, joining Gerald Liddell and Jace Febris as being out. They were undermanned. Matt Coleman left that game with a heel injury that he's still been dealing with. It just, all the signs pointed to this team is toast. It's done. There's no chance. And yet, here they are. They've won five straight games. They've gone from, I mean, this is just one metric, but it's one of my favorite ones and a place I look at a lot. They've gone from number, 83 in the KenPom.com rankings to number 50 over the course of their last five games, which you might roll your eyes at number 50. That's a gigantic increase to go from number 83 to number 50, especially this late in the season when you've already built up so many data points. That's a huge increase. That's a huge improvement this time of the year. And, you know, BartTorvik.com assigns game scores 1 to 100 based on your efficiency relative to your opponent in the game location. So obviously playing on the road is a little bit more tougher than playing at home. In the last five games, Texas scores 88, 98, 97, 96, 92. The Iowa State game was a 4. Prior to this season, I have to go back and look. I think this is true, though. I don't think Shaka Smart had ever had a game with a game score under 10. And he had two of them this year with West Virginia and then the Iowa State game. And the Providence game was close at one point, although Providence has played a lot better since then, so it's kind of pulled that game score out of the gutter a little bit. If you're curious, the best game score Texas has had all season was its first game of the year against Northern Colorado, a team that's actually turned into a really, really solid basketball team because of what they could do offensively. But Texas actually had a perfect 100 score in that game. But five straight games of 88 or better in the game score category, I mean, with a win on Saturday, they'd finished third in the Big 12. Third! And there were, you know, people were genuinely wondering, and fairly wondering, after the Iowa State game, if they'd win another Big 12 game this season because of the injuries and the way they were playing, and then with Coleman dealing with his issues, it just doesn't really make any sense. But this podcast, I'm going to try to make some sense of it. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what's been going right for this team, where they are in the NCAA tournament discussion, with one regular season game remaining at home on Saturday against Oklahoma State, which I'm expecting a really, really good crowd for the Longhorns. It still blows my mind. I read on Orange Bloods that people are just like, I'm not going to go support this team because it would mean like I'd be, you know, supporting Shaka Smart and I want him out. Like, you can remove the head coach thing. Like, those things work themselves out. Whether it's this year, whether it's down the road, whatever it is. Eventually, those things just work themselves out. You know, a coach just doesn't get to stay at a place forever if he's not performing at a high level. Of course, you got to factor in the buyouts and everything like that. But how could you, if you're a Texas fan, not want to go support this team from the player aspect? Those guys are playing their asses off. They're winning the effort and toughness and aggressiveness battle every single game over the last five games. And we'll dive into the personnel a little bit and why that's happening. But I think basketball of any college sport is probably the most easiest for a fan to watch and recognize effort and who's playing hard and who's playing smart and those types of things. And that's what Texas is doing right now. You can see it. Loose balls, rebounds, awareness on defense, urgency, confidence shooting the basketball. It's plain to see. It's plainly obvious to see that this team is really giving everything that they've got on the floor, and it's put them in a position to completely turn their season around and give themselves an opportunity in the NCAA tournament. But I wrote about this Wednesday at orangebloods.com because I watching that Tuesday game at Oklahoma where Matt Coleman makes the bank shot of his life of Shaka Smart's Texas tenure to give Texas a surprising win at Oklahoma. I mean, the Oklahoma crowd went from chanting Texas sucks while Christian Doolittle was at the line, and man, poor Christian Doolittle, man, that's his last game in Norman as a senior. Really, really good player, can really shoot the basketball. I think he was an 80% free throw shooter prior to those misses. He misses both free throws with Oklahoma up two with like a little over 6 seconds left. And Coleman comes down and leans into a three and banks it in to win the game. You know, that play was a great example of what Texas is doing right now. You know, one of my favorite underrated aspects about that play is prior to the second free throw, Texas moved Royce Ham Jr. off the free throw line in a rebounding position and switched him, I believe, with Kamaka Hepa or Brock Cunningham. I think it was Hepa. And they put Royce down the floor. It might seem like insignificant, but it put Royce Ham in a position to be a screener, and it put all of the best shooters on the floor around the basketball so that with Coleman coming up the floor, you've got guys trailing or beside the basketball that can shoot three-point shots if he needs to give that ball off to a guy like Hepa to shoot a pull-up three or Andrew Jones or something like that. So it put Royce Ham down on the floor in a position to screen, and that's what he did. Fantastic awareness by him to get into position with Coleman coming up the floor and screen Austin Reeves. And if he doesn't do that, Coleman's not able to get that shot off with his left hand to his left side as cleanly as he did. And it was just a great example of Texas, just what they've been doing so much lately, which is the awareness and the total commitment to, I've got to do whatever helps my team win on this play, and then I'll move to the next play, and so on and so forth. And that's something that Texas has talked a lot about doing, is just they call it losing themselves in the fight. You know, if just for 40 minutes on the floor, nothing else matters besides fighting and competing and trying to win a basketball game. And it's something they've been working to. It's something they talk about often. It's something that we've kind of rolled our eyes at it in the past. Like, okay, like we get it, but why aren't these things showing on the floor? Right now they are showing on the floor, and I think that end of game play with Coleman's make was just a fantastic example of that. Going back to, you know, on Wednesday I wrote, I was just trying to put into words, like, why is this happening? How is this happening? Because it really just doesn't make any sense. Like I said, this team is left for dead at Iowa State with all the injuries and the way they're playing and an embarrassing 29-point loss. And, you know, the Shaka's hot seat was scorching hot. And then you had the John Beilein news in Cleveland, and everybody was speculating about, you know, what would happen with him. If he wanted to coach college basketball again, him in Texas would make a lot of sense because Luke Yaklich is here and it would be the biggest name program on the market and all these things. And it doesn't make any sense that Texas has won five games since then, but I'm going to try to explain it as best as I can. You know, sometimes in college sports, teams are able to rally around a cause, and I think you see this often in basketball just because there's not that many players, you know, relative to football where you've got 85 scholarship limit and baseball where you've got 35 guys on the active roster and 27 on the travel roster. In basketball, you might have, I mean, you got 13 scholarships to use, but not all teams. I mean, Texas is only using 12 of those this year. And then right now, they basically only have, I mean, depending on Donovan Williams' status, they usually only have 8 or 9 scholarship guys right now. And I think what you're seeing is these guys rallying around the cause and just saying, okay, we've got who we've got. Our backs are up against the wall. It's now or never. And, you know, sometimes you see teams respond really, really well to that. And they just start playing above their heads and just losing themselves in the idea of we've got to do whatever it takes to win basketball games, which they did at Oklahoma. They didn't shoot the ball well at all at Oklahoma. They lost a free throw battle 29-2. And the only reason they got two free throws was because Austin Reeves grabbed Andrew Jones's leg after he lost the ball. And they called a flagrant foul. They correctly called a flagrant foul that put Jones to the line late in the game. That's the only reason Texas shot free throws. And I know Texas has been one of the worst, if not the worst, team in the country in terms of free throw rate. But there were several opportunities when Texas drove the ball into the paint and got a lot of contact and did not get to the free throw line. And yet Oklahoma shot 29 free throws. So not only did Texas lose the free throw battle 29-2, it didn't shoot the ball well, and it still found a way to win the game. And that's just that's a good example of, like, these guys are just figuring out any way possible, any means necessary to win basketball games. And I think you're seeing these guys rally around, okay, we have who we have. We know these guys are injured. We know all of us collectively have to step up and figure out a way to win basketball games. And I think, too, there's something to be said for knowing you're going to play and knowing that you're needed. Now, Shocker Smart definitely leans very much on this side of the spectrum when it comes to being a player's coach. He is definitely in the player's coach area. He's not Rick Barnes, where, you know, Rick at Texas, you miss a shot, he'd immediately pull you out of the game sometimes. Whereas Shaka, I think sometimes to a fault, he's really tried to let guys play through things. So he definitely is on that side of the spectrum. That said, though, when you've got so many pieces of the puzzle to try to use, when you've got 12 scholarship guys that can all play, and then have all at some different points in times been a significant part of the equation. I mean, let's remember Brock Cunningham started the first game of the year and was labeled as a rotation player, so even he was a guy that was thought to be in the mix. You know, everybody's kind of had their moment. When you have that many available bodies to choose from, you do have guys on the floor that are trying to find their way. And even though you're a player's coach and trying to encourage them to play through mistakes, they are going to look over their shoulders sometimes when they make a turnover or they blow a defensive assignment or they force a shot and they miss it. Even though they might have that longer leash, there's still that idea of, I have to play a certain way to make sure I have minutes this game, even though my coach is trying to tell me to be aggressive, confident, loose. There's still that, you still look over at the bench and know, okay, there's a lot of options. Right now, there's not a lot of options. They have who they have. All of those guys know that they've got to play. They know their roles. They know that if they just go out there and tack the game, they don't have to worry about playing time. They're playing. And there's something about that I think frees guys up on the court to just let it all out, to just go attack the game. Royce Ham Jr. had 6 turnovers against Oklahoma. But Royce Ham Jr. played a really good basketball game. He was able to just, okay, I'm going to brush these mistakes off. He had a fantastic block on an alley-oop. I think he had 8 points and 8 rebounds in the first half against Oklahoma. He played really nice defense again. He defended Christian Doolittle much of that game, especially in some one-on-one situations, even though he had 6 turnovers. Which I don't know in the past if Royce Ham would have been able to stay on the floor with 6 turnovers. And I know some Texas fans are like, oh, you know, Shocker Smart stumbled into the right personnel, and that's not just limited to fans. But it's not like Jericho Sims was playing poorly. Jericho Sims was playing like an all-conference player that people were starting to wonder if he'd leave for the NBA draft. He was playing really well. He was playing a lot of minutes. He was arguably the team's best player on both ends of the floor. And I know Jace Febres had grown streaky and those sorts of things, but there were some games where Jace Febres won Texas the game because he just caught fire from beyond the arc and really shot Texas to a victory. And, you know, I know Gerald Liddell was a guy they're super excited about, and he had some really bright moments earlier in the season. He just wasn't that player, which I think goes back to he was kind of battling that back injury for a long time. But, you know, there's a point where Gerald Liddell was playing really well. Like, go back to that Purdue game. I mean, he earned a lot of starts moving forward because he was so awesome in that game. So it's not like these guys, it's not like Texas was playing a bunch of guys that were terrible, and that's why they were losing games, and suddenly they just, oh, okay, well, we got to put these guys out there now. That's just not the case. You know, if Texas had used this same exact personnel, like let's say the Purdue game in the 8 games after that or whatever, I don't think this group of players would have played this way, you know, because they would have been looking at the bench as well and knowing that, okay, we've got a lot of bodies. A lot of guys are competing for my minutes as well. So, but I do think that being said, you have to absolutely wonder why Brock Cunningham wasn't playing more, because I go back to before the season and I took a lot of heat on the Orange Woods message board for basically putting myself firmly in the Brock Cunningham camp. And it was because of I had good reasons. You know, I went up to Big 12 Media Day and Courtney Ramey and Matt Coleman both talked about when each of those two guys was a captain when Texas would scrimmage in practice because of you want to split up the point guards, Ramey and Coleman, two of the best players. And they said that, you know, which the guy that had the first pick out of Ramey and Coleman, they said, you know, I'd often take Brock Cunningham because I didn't want to play against him because I knew that he would defend the other team's best player. He'd go after rebounds. He'd do all the little things, and the other team would hate playing against him. So it's just like you're filing that away. It's like the players usually know, you know, the players know who they want to play with. The players know who the real ones are. And Shaka Smart, too, at Big 12 Media Day, and even before the season began when he did his kind of like preseason final media, I guess like kind of like state of the program type thing to preview the upcoming season, he was talking about how Brock Cunningham is the best offensive rebounder on a team, his defensive versatility really stands out, he's guarded some of the best players in scrimmages, and he's going to be a rotation piece. I believe he used those exact words, that he was going to be a rotation piece. Cunningham started both close scrimmages, and some of that was because of injury. Ramey was out with an injury, and then he started the season opener, perhaps and probably because Gerald Liddell was out with a concussion. But even then, all those things pointed towards Brock Cunningham being a rotation piece of the puzzle, at the very least. And he started that opening game against Northern Colorado, and I have to go back and look. Actually, I'm going to look right now. He didn't play a ton. I'm going to look it up right fast, because that's going to bother me if I don't know the answer to that question. He played 10 minutes. He missed 3 threes, and he had 2 turnovers. So immediately everybody was kind of like, oh, you idiot. What were you saying all these things about Brock Cunningham? I had one prominent poster on orangebloods.com say my preseason reports were hilariously inaccurate, that Brock Cunningham totally overmatched. Jericho Sims hasn't gotten any better. Donovan Williams looks like a guy that's going to play a ton and be a star. It's like, okay, it's just funny to go back and read those things now because this is Brock Cunningham. This is him. This is the guy Texas recruited. This is why Texas recruited him. He's a tough SOB. And, you know, I saw John Rothstein's kind of special little feature on Texas basketball where he used Rocky III reference with Shaka Smart and talked about Brock Cunningham. And he said there are no such thing as 50-50 balls of Brock Cunningham. They're more like 90-10. And it's true. Like, there, you watch Brock Cunningham play, you're going to notice bodies hitting the floor. You're going to notice that he, more so than anybody else on the floor, is around the most rebounds and loose balls. That's who Brock Cunningham is. And he made 2 huge threes against Oklahoma. It's an unorthodox shot. It doesn't look pretty, but he can shoot the basketball. This is a guy at one point in an Adidas game on the Adidas circuit in AAU, had a 34.13 rebound performance with 7 threes. He filled up the stat sheet every damn game in AAU. And that Texas recruited him because that guy, they're like, I know he's going to play tougher and harder than anybody else on the floor. And that's who he is. And that's who he's showing. So, yeah, we can fairly question Shaka Smart. Like, why wasn't this guy playing more? My educated guess is sometimes coaches, you know, they often pick the talent side of the equation when it comes to putting guys on the floor. And for Texas specifically, we know that their offense has lagged behind their defense, especially statistically this season. So I think Texas was trying to search for more offense, given guys like Kamaka Hepa, Gerald Liddell, maybe even Donovan Williams, and then an uber athlete like Kai Jones, some more run than Cunningham. When now it's like, in hindsight, it's like, well, you might have won some more games with Brock Cunningham because he's a winning player. He makes winning basketball plays. And every program needs that kind of guy, but every program's got to play that guy. He doesn't do you no good just practicing hard, you know, in hoping that he rubs off on teammates. He's got to get on the floor a little bit as well. So that's a long roundabout way to talk about the personnel and how it's factored into the equation with this five-game winning streak. Him and Cunningham and Royce Ham in the front court duo, man, what they've been doing defensively, watching those guys communicate and cover each other and be able to switch on certain players and stuff, it is a lot of fun to watch. And man, they are going after rebounds right now. I think both of those guys had 11 rebounds against Oklahoma. Another reason for this run is shot making. This is a make-or-miss game. As all these coaches say, you know, Bob Huggins, when Texas beat West Virginia a couple weeks ago, said that, hey, Texas made shots and we didn't. And right now, Andrew Jones and Courtney Ramey especially are making a lot of shots. I think Texas as a team during this five-game win streak, I'd have to look, but I think it's 42.4% from beyond the arc. So shot making makes a big difference. You know, this team was always going to go as its guards go in terms of playmaking. If Texas guards could outplay the other team's guards, Texas was going to probably win a lot of basketball games. And I don't think that's changed, you know, even with Coleman being less than 100%, which, you know, he had 21 points on 9 of 15 shooting against Oklahoma playing on a bum heel. And he's during not to get too far off the shot making point, but during this five game win streak, Coleman's played in just four games because he missed a TCU game with that heel injury. He's played 136 minutes. He's turned the ball over four times. Four! That's it. Four times in 136 minutes. And against Oklahoma, I think he played 36 minutes and he had zero turnovers. And that was in a game where Texas at the beginning was everybody was kind of too amped up, playing too fast. They had a bunch of ugly turnovers. And there's Coleman just trying to chill everybody out. Just give me the ball. I'll run the show. I'm not going to turn this thing over. I'm going to get us where we need to get and try to get into the paint and those sorts of things. But getting back to the shot making, it's a huge part of what's going on with Texas. You know, Shaka Smart before the season said he thought this team would be his best three-point shooting team at Texas. And so far, that's proven to be true. I think that they are at, let me look it up right now. I think they're at 34.1% from beyond the arc. Yes, they are. 34.1% from beyond the arc, which I believe is his best mark at Texas. No, it actually ties exactly his first team in Austin in 2015-16 season when they shot 34.1%. But if you look at league play, Texas is at 34.8% in league play, which is second behind Texas Tech. And then going back to the last year, Texas actually shot a little bit better from three-point range in Big 12 play last year. But I think his general point was that he thought this team would be able to shoot the ball well from beyond the arc. And lately it has. And it's a big part of that's been Ramey and Jones, which Shaka Smart is basically said, hey, with Matt being less than 100% and us being undermanned, Courtney Ramey has done a fantastic job leading us. And we're starting to see the Ramey that we thought we'd see all season. He's a killer. That's a term that college basketball coaches use a lot, you know, kind of behind the scenes about recruits or players in their program when it's like the highest praise you can get. Because you're just a super confident winner that's going to go attack the basketball game. And that's what Courtney Ramey is right now. And that's one of the reasons why Texas loved him so much as a recruit. But Andrew Jones, man, he's in basketball shape now. You know, he played, I think, 39 minutes against Texas Tech on the road and played well on both ends of the floor. It wasn't just offense. He was competing at a high level defensively as well. He could not have done that when the season began. He just couldn't. You know, he was barely a couple months removed from his final chemotherapy treatment. You know, that's where he was. And now that he's got a full, you know, basically a full regular season under his belt, he's had some more time to put in extra work behind the scenes on his conditioning. He's able to be out there on the floor for basically the entire game. And it's a good thing for Texas because it needs him. It needs him the entire game to play because they don't have any guards. Especially Donovan Williams battling his issues now. They don't have any guards. That's it. They got Jones, Ramey, and Coleman. You know, with Donovan sidelined and Jay sidelined and Liddell, how awesome is it to see Andrew Jones doing this? He's playing at an exceptionally high level. He's scoring from all three levels. He's playing with a ton of confidence and poise. He's competing well in the defensive end. He's breathing a lot of energy and confidence into his team. I mean, he's doing a fantastic job. It, man, how cool is that to watch this guy, considering all that he's been through. He so much wanted to be known as a basketball player first again. And he is. You know, it's funny now. You start talking about his play, and it's almost like, oh, yeah, that guy was doing chemotherapy not that long ago. But it's not the first thing on your mind sometimes when you're watching him now, because he's been playing at such a high level during this winning streak. And another reason why I think that this winning streak is happening is the defense and the effort. You know, I think some people have fairly pointed to the three-point shooting and say, hey, like, this is the reason why they're winning. But against Oklahoma, that shooting wasn't there. The offensive efficiency was not good. I think Oklahoma did a fantastic job defensively with what they were doing around the perimeter to really try to take away what Texas does. So what did Texas do? It leaned on its defense and its effort. They've wanted all season to be the defense to be the anchor, and they've wanted to play harder and more aggressive than the opposition. And that's what they did against Oklahoma, and that's what they've been doing during this streak. Over the last 10 games, Texas in defensive efficiency is number three team in the country. If you took just Texas's last five games of adjusted defensive efficiency and you compared it to the season leaders right now for the entire season, I think Virginia might be at the top. It would rank number one nationally in adjusted defensive efficiency. So the Longhorns are playing fantastic on defense. Really, really good defense. And that's been a big part of their success as well, is they're playing with great urgency on that end of the floor. They're communicating. They have good game plans. They're making good in-game adjustments. They're really competing well on that end of the floor. And they're competing on the glass, too, even though they're basically undersized. You know, when Ham and Cunningham are out there, that's not a tall front court. But it's an aggressive front court. It's a determined front court. It's two guys that are just going to go attack the ball off the rim every single time. And I think Kai Jones has given them some of that as well. But it's, you know, the defense and the effort. I think of the last five games, I don't think you can say another team has played better defense and played harder than Texas. Now, that Oklahoma game was a war. That was the closest game. I think you could say both those teams, it was a pretty even split in terms of defensive effort. It was an ugly game, but both those teams left every ounce of energy they had on the floor. But the four games prior to that, Texas was the tougher, more aggressive, and better defensive team. And that's the type of team they've wanted to be all season. You know, again, they talk about this losing yourself in the fight type thing, and it really starts on that end of the floor. And then, two, and finally, about you know, why this is happening for Texas, you got to give Shaka Smart and his staff a lot of credit. I joked with Shaka when I asked him a question recently that he's kind of increased my awareness of body language, because it's something that he talks a lot about. So I've always just kind of watched the sideline and how it carries itself during games and how he interacts with his team and all those sorts of things. And he's always been a super energetic guy, always trying to pump energy into his team, into the game. But ever since that Iowa State game, he's been a little bit different. There's been a different level of intensity radiating for him, a different level of fire coming from him on the sidelines. He's gotten two technicals, which we had to go back and look. The last time he had a technical at Texas, I think, was 2 years ago at Texas Tech. He hadn't had many of them in his career. I think he might have had five total during his Texas tenure, which is almost 5 years long. But ever since that Iowa State game, he's just been a little bit different. And I wonder if with this personnel, with guys that are kind of more similar to what he had at VCU from a mindset and a, I guess, just skill set standpoint, I wonder if he's felt that he could really challenge these groups of guys in a different way than he could some of the other guys that were playing, like a Jericho, who's a good competitor, but just a really quiet kind of, I don't mean this negatively, but kind of a mentally fragile guy. You've got to pump a lot of positivity and confidence into him. I think same thing with, you know, maybe Jeff Febris, and definitely the same thing with Gerald Liddell in terms of confidence. But when you've got guys like Brock Cunningham and Royce Ham out there, I think that you can challenge those guys differently. You can get on their ass. You can really, you know, try to bring that toughness and that extreme effort out of them and really just go after them. And, you know, this personnel, I think, more closely resembles what Shaka had at VCU, kind of more of those undersized guys in the front court that are just super tough. They're physical. They can switch around the perimeter. But really, too, you know, it's not as easy as saying, hey, some of these underrated guys are like the guys he had at VCU, which I get that point with guys like Hammond and Cunningham, because they weren't big-time recruits. But Courtney Ramey was. Andrew Jones was. Matt Coleman was. But those three guards, I think, check a lot of the mental boxes that Shaka Smart wants. You know, Jones carries himself with a ton of confidence. Coleman, we know, is a guy that Shaka Smart's recruited since he was in eighth grade. Ramey is that killer, that just, you know, that junkyard dog type of guy that really resembles a lot of the players that Shaka Smart had at VCU. So even his highly rated guys that are playing right now, and Kai Jones is kind of like that too, kind of a late bloomer, not a really big-time recruit. He was rated really highly, but kind of burst onto the scene late, just one of those extreme effort and energy guys. This personnel, I think, most closely resembles what he had at VCU in terms of the way they attack the game. And I wonder if he's just, maybe without even thinking about it. And of course, the urgency aspect, back against the wall, you know, he admitted for the first time publicly that he was kind of aware of the conversation surrounding him in the program. And I'm sure that's kind of played a part into this as well. Like, hey, you know, desperation can bring different things out of people. But this isn't the first time Texas has had its back against the wall, you know, playing for the NCAA tournament. Just look at last season. It feels like every year, besides the second year, and maybe the first, Texas was comfortably in the first year, that Texas has basically been on the bubble, you know? So it's not like the first time Texas has been in this situation, but something about Shaka Smart since Iowa State and this team since Iowa State, there's just a different intensity coming from him, and you can see it on the sidelines. I mean, he's exhausted after games. I mean, it's like that he was on the floor playing 40 minutes with just how much intensity he's bringing. You know, he's just pounding the floor every defensive possession. It's just, it's a little bit of a different Shaka Smart. And regardless of what you think of him in his four prior seasons at Texas and the long-term outlook of the program, he and his staff deserve a ton of credit for what they've done these last five games, going from basically left for dead to a game away from finishing third in the Big 12 with 20 regular season wins. And that's a good transition to talk about the NCAA tournament. I think if you look right now, most projection models and I guess bracket projections and things like that do have Texas in the NCAA tournament. I'm looking at Bart Twovik right now, and he has a thing called TeamCast, which basically simulates where your team is likely to finish. So with Texas, it simulates the one final regular season game as it does with everybody else. Which is the Oklahoma State game, it projects Texas to win that game by 4 points, which is probably close to the betting line. So if Texas were to have that result, based on Torvik's team cast, Texas would be in the NCAA tournament. It would actually be the last team to receive a bye and not have to play in one of those play-in games. And his method assigns Texas a 71.9% chance of making the tournament. So I think right now, if you look across the country, you're going to find most projection models and brackets and things like that are going to have Texas in the NCAA tournament. You know, suddenly they have five Q1 wins, which are huge. I mean, they've added a lot of those most recently. It's projected them to be 3-4 in Q2 wins because Oklahoma State is a quadrant two game on Saturday. And importantly for Texas, it has no bad losses, no Q3 and no Q4 losses, which really helps boost that resume. And so do those road wins as well. So I think that if Texas wins Saturday, it's in the NCAA tournament, regardless of what happens in the Big 12 tournament, because I just have a hard time envisioning a team that finishes 10-8 in the Big 12, a really good basketball conference, finishes two games above 500, third in the league, has the road wins that they've added recently, and has 20 overall wins. Those teams don't get left out of the NCAA tournament. It'd be a stunner if Texas wins on Saturday and gets left out of the NCAA tournament. Now, where things could get tricky is if Texas slips up on Saturday against Oklahoma State, then you got to think they might have to win a game in the Big 12 tournament to get into the NCAA tournament, just because a loss on Saturday could drop them from like third to like fifth or sixth in the league. I should know that off the top of my head, but just because everybody is so close right now in the Big 12 standings. I mean, we can look at them right now. You know, Saturday could just do a lot to the Big 12 standings, because you got Texas Tech at 9-8, Texas at 9-8, West Virginia at 8-9, Oklahoma at 8-9, and then TCU at 7-10. So there's a lot of things that could happen. We know Kansas and Baylor are going to finish in some 1-2 order. And we know Kansas State's going to finish at the bottom of the league. But that middle part, that 3, 4, 5, 6, perhaps even 7 range, is still to be determined based on what happens on Saturday. So I do think that, you know, if Texas lost on Saturday at home to Oklahoma State, a game they'll be favored in, suddenly I think they're very much on the bubble and would probably need to win a game in the NCAA tournament. But if they handle their business Saturday, I just have a hard time envisioning any scenario where Texas is not in the NCAA tournament. And I think it would be in without needing to play one of those those playing games as well. 20 overall wins, third in the Big 12, 2 games above 500. I think that that's definitely enough to get them into the NCAA tournament and away from one of those playing games. And then, of course, you know, the big question is something we covered at orangebloods.com in the war room last night is the status for Shaka Smart at Texas. I mean, his hot seat was as hot as a hot seat could be after the Iowa State game, and now Texas has won 5 straight games. I really think that Matt Coleman shot at Oklahoma kind of swung the meter from likely to be a change to not likely to be a change. I think that's how big that shot was. I think that's how big that win was as it relates to the NCAA tournament. Look, Chris Del Conte is not in a rush to pay this buyout, which is going to be it would be around $10.5 million. And then you got to factor in, are you going to have to pay a buyout to hire another coach? Then you're going to have to give that coach guaranteed money. I mean, as much as Texas fans, you know, pay attention to basketball and the success they've had over, you know, the last couple of decades or whatever, Texas is not a basketball school. It's never going to be a basketball school. So it's, you know, you're talking about a huge paycheck to cut for the second sport on campus in terms of generating revenue, maybe second in popularity, although you could say Texas baseball probably has a more passionate, bigger following than Texas basketball. So I don't think Chris Del Conte is in a rush to seek reasons why to cut that check. I think that they like Shaka Smart. President Fenves likes Shaka Smart because he's checked all the boxes besides the winning box. You know, and this is something that Pete Thamel wrote about, and it's something I've written about at orangebloods.com. Hiring a basketball coach right now, it's just not a great time to do that. And administrators are fearful of what's going to happen with this FBI investigation stuff that's still lingering out there. You don't really know where that's going to spread or keep spreading to, and just how clean some of these coaches are. And you'd have to ask yourself, too, do I want to be a clean program or do I want to be a little dirty, a lot dirty? Because there's definitely programs like that out there that don't do things a certain right way. So I think if Texas gets into the NCAA tournament, I have a very, very hard time seeing Texas parting ways with Shaka Smart, even if he's one and done in the NCAA tournament, because I don't think Chris Del Conte wants to write that check. And when you get into this situation as a decision maker, when it's not an easy call, which is what it looked like it was going to be after Iowa State, it was going to be pretty cut and dry. Hey, this ain't working. You got to go. Now it's not. And when you get to one of these situations where it's not clear cut one way or the other, then as a decision maker, you start looking at the pros, the cons, the finances, who you can replace them with. You start, you know, kind of in your head, like, okay, you know, if I make a move, who can I get? Will that person be better? How much will it cost? Or if I stick with my guy, you know, what are my reasons why, you know, how am I presenting this to my fan base, et cetera, et cetera. And if Texas gets into the NCAA tournament, you start to look at the possible pros. You're like, well, Texas is going to bring everybody back, probably. You're going to potentially add Greg Brown to that mix, a 5-star guy. Like, on paper, that'd be a team that would be projected to be, you know, maybe in the top 4, top 3 of the Big 12, and perhaps even a preseason top 25 team. So it's like, you know, that's, you know, you start weighing the pros and cons, and you can kind of, it's, I think it'd be easier to talk yourself into, you know, okay, $10.5 million buyout hiring somebody else, or same roster with potentially Greg Brown added to it for next season. Let's run this thing back and see what happens. I mean, that's, when it's not a clear yes or no answer, and when it's more gray than black and white, as a decision maker, you start weighing those things. And I think that's something that Chris Del Conte is going to have to weigh. And I think that if Shaka Smart gets into the NCAA tournament, I don't think Chris Del Conte is going to want to make a change because he doesn't want to cut that check. and he can start to look at the future and say, okay, I see enough pros potentially with this situation to where I'm comfortable with bringing this back and keeping it going moving forward. And with that, we'll wrap up episode 47 of the Dropping Dimes podcast on theact.com. I actually have to cut this. Ooh, went a little longer than I thought it would. I've got to go up to campus and meet with some Texas basketball players for media availability prior to their big game on Saturday against Oklahoma State. You can listen to all of our great podcast content at theact.com. You can follow me on Twitter at dmccombsob. Go to orangewoods.com and catch all our Texas Longhorns basketball coverage. Email me, dustin@orangewoods.com. Drop me a line. Would love to hear from many listeners or any questions or thoughts or concerns or whatever you want to send my way. But it's Friday. It's a nice day out. I hope you guys are washing your hands, staying clean, not freaking out too much from this coronavirus stuff. And, you know, hopefully you're not coughing up as much junk as I am. But I hope you guys have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather. Stay safe, wash your hands. And until I talk to you next time, take care.